You know, there's this cynics and atheists who like to also say, well, you don't remember what I said 20 seconds ago, to put it exactly in words. How can you know that these guys remembered what Jesus said? And it's obviously not understanding that we trust in the supernatural nature of the scriptures. Remember things. Jesus said in John 14:26, that when the Helper, the Holy Spirit, whom the Father will send in my name, when he comes, he will teach you all things and bring into your remembrance all things that I said to you. So the gospel writers and the apostles were given anointed memories and remembrances and supernatural insights so that they could write the words that they wrote and write them accurately. And it's a beautiful thing. Last week, we saw that Jesus, talking with the religious leaders who were angry at him healing a man that was a paralytic, said to them, it's not the well that need a physician, but the sick. And we all know that as he said that, he wasn't saying, you guys aren't sick. I came for the people that are sick. You guys are great. Love your robes. No. Oh, we use the word sick today. I sent somebody a note. I said, that's sick, with quotes around it, because I was trying to be, you know, relevant. And but it wasn't a young person, so I had to explain it to him. It was actually to Mark, and he may have understood it. I said, you'll get it tomorrow when I'm talking, is we use the word sick people for like something that's amazing and wonderful and cool. I mean, I remember the first time I went to Oregon, and I was 37 years old when we moved there, and I'm involved in the church and working with these two youth guys. And I was telling them a true story, and they went, no way! And I go, no, it really happened. And they go, wow, no way! And I thought they were saying, no, you're lying. I was getting mad. I was going, yes, it was true. And they kind of went, yeah, we get it. We were just reacting. No way. But that's how far gone I am. Anyway, and that was many years ago, so you're in for a treat. Speaking of sickness, this is what we see. Every human is sin sick and needs the great physician. Is that true? Yeah. So speaking of this, 18 through 26. While he spoke these things to them, behold, a ruler came and worshipped him, saying, my daughter has just died, but come and lay your hands on her and she will live. So Jesus arose and followed him, and so did his disciples. And suddenly a woman who had a flow of blood for 12 years came from behind and touched the hem of his garment. For she said to herself, if I only may touch his garment, I shall be made well. But Jesus turned around, and when he saw her, said, be of good cheer, daughter. Your faith has made you well. The woman was made well from that hour. When Jesus came into the ruler's house and saw the flute players and the noisy crowd wailing, he said to them, make room, for the girl is not dead, but sleeping. And they ridiculed him. But when the crowd was put outside, he went in and took her by the hand. And the girl arose, and the report of this went out in all the land. Now, Mark tells us that she was at the point of death when the ruler came. And Luke tells us his name's come with the news to him and say, don't bother the master, your daughter's dead. Is this difference a discrepancy that makes us doubt the Bible and reduce its trustworthiness? That's A. Or B, does this confirm its authenticity? Bill, I'll take B. Because the Bible is authentic. Matthew, who may have been there, but may not, even though he's just in the earlier verses, we find that it's when he began to follow Jesus. We don't have exact chronologies. Mark often is giving us the reduced story with information he heard from somebody else, and he's just giving the basic facts. Sometimes Matthew's doing that, and sometimes Luke's doing that. Luke tends to be more intensely getting the details, but he was getting them from people who were at those situations. And so it's, as I've said before and others have said, and I just want to encourage you, that's authenticity. If every story matched and every word that was spoken was exactly the same, that would be because But when you have three people telling a story with the main points in this room, you will play telephone. You know, you will find that there's things that they focused on one part versus the other. So I believe this actually helps us understand the authenticity of the stories, because they're not pretending to match every detail, but the story is intact and important. It's not a fairy tale. They're focusing on the same event, and Matthew's giving us, if you will, the Reader's Digest version. Anybody remember Reader's Digest? Is that still out? Okay. Well, I moved on, but apparently some of you haven't. But so this ruler, whose name is Jairus, which doesn't matter to us in this story right now, we do know he's a synagogue ruler, and that means he's willing to take a big risk to come to the movement among the religious leaders. Hatred for Jesus. Nobody kicking people out of the synagogue if they follow him. But you know what's interesting about then, when you're facing death of a loved one or yourself, your priorities can really change quick. Now, I don't know that about him. He may have been a long-term, guy who was open to Jesus, but now he's crying out to Jesus. And Jesus says, let's go. We'll go. Without hesitation, but he does get an interruption. Now, this is where Luke tells us that the friends come. As Jesus is with the lady that touched him, his robe, and he turned around and said, who touched me? In Luke, Jesus, as he's with her, the friends come and say, your daughter's dead, don't bother the master. But when we look at this lady, we see that her fear was exposure. She was fearful to come and touch him. She didn't want to go right in front of him. She maybe couldn't get there. Imagine what it took for this lady who's sick and weak from a blood loss kind of circumstance, and is also under the instruction that she's not to be touched, she's unclean because of a flow of blood, that she's making her way through a crowd to touch the hem of his garment. So she has fear of exposure, but she has faith that if I'll just touch his robe and the very bottom, the hem, I'll be healed. Many of you know, but not everyone, that they wear robes that had stripes, thick stripes of blue at the bottom, and they were tasseled. It also switched, and if you've seen in recent centuries, you see Jewish people wear, and the Mormons pick up on this with the undergarment, just around a vest that has tassels on it and the untied up ends at four corners and blue in it. And you also see a tallis that other Jews will wear, wrapping it around them with the blue stripes in it and the stranded ends. You're familiar with seeing these things. So you've seen them at our Passovers when I do those. So however they've done through history, they were usually wearing it in a robe that they put on them that they wore everywhere. And they were doing it to fulfill Numbers 15:38 through 41, which says, and we have it, I believe, speak to the children of Israel, tell them to make tassels on the corners of their garments throughout their generations, and put blue thread with the tassels on the corners, and you shall have the tassels that you may look upon it and remember all the commandments of the Lord to do them, and that you may not follow the harlotry. That you may not follow the harlotry to which your own hearts and your own eyes are inclined, and that you may remember to do all my commandments and to be holy for your God. I am the Lord your God who brought you out of the land of Egypt to be your God. I am the Lord your God. Wow, this doesn't sound like, aren't you wonderful and holy? Why don't you wear a robe to show everybody how wonderful and holy you are? And it's kind of amazing. A blue thread now becomes a wide border, and the wider it is, we go from that. We go from a humble expression of the need to remember God. We're all sick. We're all tempted. We're all weak. Let's help us remember who God is and that we love him and that he's merciful to us. It goes from that to Matthew 23:5. Where Jesus rebuking the religious leaders to his disciples, trying to get them to understand not to be like these guys. For all their works they do to be seen of men. They make their phylacteries broad. Now, that was the leather patches, the leather straps with the scriptures inside a box. And enlarge the borders of their garments, meaning the blue. They enlarge the blue. Like, oh, you're a captain with that much? Well, I'm a major with this much. Well, I'm a general with this much. You know, like stripes. How many stripes do you have? How many medals do you have? They make their phylacteries broad and enlarge the borders of their garments. So blue thread became a wide stripe of self-importance and a claim to holiness. Man, that's sick. That's sick, isn't it? I'm using it now. We're just going to sick is sick, okay? But she believed that they had spiritual authority in those garments, in Jesus' power, even though there was absolutely no power in the hem of his garment. Okay, that's superstition. People love superstition. They love to have items, things that you can use to help you touch the Lord. And I understand that. Here, what over time, this became like a tradition, but an empty tradition. Yet she believed there was power, and she expressed her faith as best she could. So I'm not here to rail on this lady for being superstitious. I remember that somebody mentioned Naaman in 2 Kings chapter 7, I believe. Chief of staff of the king of Syria came down to the northern kingdom of Israel when Elisha, not Elijah, his protege, Elisha, was operating. And because he was told that he had begun to get leprosy, and now he's going to see if he can be healed by the God of Israel. And when he comes, Elisha, there's a whole story there, but he's told, I'm just going to tell this part. He's told to dip 7 times in the Jordan River. First he gets mad because there's 5 rivers that are better than the stinking little Jordan River. And his servants say, hey, if he asked you to do something really hard, would you have done it? Yeah, well, then just do the simple thing, he said. So he does it. I got to bow down with my master and hold his arm when he goes to worship a false god. Let God forgive me for that because I have to do it as his general. And number 2, I want to take some dirt from Israel to bring it so that when I kneel down to pray, I'm kneeling on the dirt from the God of Israel. Now, if you have a little bottle of sand from Israel and you like that, that's great. There is no power in the dirt of Israel. Does everybody understand? There's no supernatural power in oil that's been gotten from Israel. It's a beautiful thing. We use oil sometimes from Israel to anoint people. I mean, why not? I'll tell you one reason. Physical realm that you take and God puts something on that, that's superstition. That's magic. Thought to be. We believe in God's supernatural power, but we don't believe in magic. And so, but you know, at the same time, when the guy says, let me take dirt from Israel, in his mind, that's as far as he understood. He's a general. He lives in another nation nearby. He believes there's a blessing on the land of Israel. His heart is right. Her heart is right. So I'm teaching, so I'm telling you about superstition, but I wouldn't rail on somebody. I would walk through a journey with somebody to help them get past it if I had that kind of relationship. But I'm not here to rail on everybody's traditions. It's a delicate issue. And you have to, you know, when you come in with a shotgun on people with all your knowledge and just blast them away with truth, you're not helping them. When you keep your mouth shut, when it might be uncomfortable and you really could help somebody get past something, that's also wrong. So welcome to the world of having to have God lead you. And have a relationship with him. See, all of this moves you away from give me a piece of paper or a Bible and number it where all the instructions are exactly what I'm to do in every situation. Give me that because I don't want to have to think. I don't want to have to pray. Any mistakes, and I'm not going to do anything unless I know I'm not going to make a mistake. Welcome to how not to grow in your relationship with God. Welcome in how to stay completely in the same place for 20 years and never grow. You understand my sarcasm. It's not intended towards anyone's harm. It's to help you and help whoever this may apply to. Is the Bible doesn't give us exactitudes about every detail of how to communicate his truth. It gives us a sensitivity to his spirit. In one moment, you share this, and in another moment, you share that. But you always are founded in the truth of his word. And some things are black and white. They are. But this was an unfounded tradition. She expressed her faith as best she could. So did Naaman. Elijah didn't say, "You fool, let lightning, let your stuff come back, your leprosy come back, because there's no power in that dirt. It's the God of heaven. Don't worship idols." He said, "Go ahead and take the dirt." And so God understands that. And I love this about Jesus. And what I just described, I had a verse that I didn't get to first, which is Matthew 12:20. Thinking about, you won't find Jesus yelling at people in the streets. "A bruised reed he will not break, and smoking flax he will not quench, till he sends forth justice to victory." So it doesn't mean Jesus didn't speak strongly in public, because he did. For, you know, he was up on hillsides and spoke very strong words. He rebuked the Pharisees publicly. But he also wasn't breaking bruised reeds and putting out little bits of fire where there was hope and a chance for life to come. Like this little girl, he brought it back. Now, she was sick. Moving on, she was sick for 12 years. The woman was sick for 12 years with this disease, this illness. And she was, ostracized from temple worship. She was untouchable. Was this punishment? No. This was not punishment for this woman. The law brings a harsh reality. The law of God brings a harsh reality. And that reality is that none of us is righteous and can keep it. Okay, here we go. None of us is righteous and none of us can keep the law, and the law can only condemn us. But it also does another thing. The law is a shadow of Christ. The law is a, this is not Rick Cohen's words, it's in the New Testament in Galatians and in Romans and all spoken. The law is a shadow of Christ. He could perfectly and did perfectly fulfill the law. He will do that through an eternal state of completion that he's our high priest. And so they would not allow priests into the temple even if they were from Aaron's family, if they had any kind of deformity, not to pick on them and say, "You're evil, you're worse, you're sinful." But it was a point of instruction and clarity that there's a purity and a holiness that is required that none of us can fulfill. And it showed the weakness of the people. And so the blood with this woman, it said no one who has a blood flow like this or some kind of any kind of oozing thing can come into the temple area, and you don't go inside to do the items of the temple, that's only for the priests, but to the temple worship in the courtyard, she would have been ostracized only because that's the picture, as harsh as it is, it's pointing us to something wonderful. Jesus is the only one who can deliver us from our blood impurity. Do you know there's power in the blood? There's sin in the blood. You know, you were born with a defect, a sinful human nature. It was passed on in the blood of Adam. Jesus is the only one to deliver us from our blood impurity. And how did he do it? By shedding his blood for us. Well, that woman didn't know that, Rick, and she lived all those years and stuff. Do you think when the day she got healed, she's worried about that anymore? Do you think in heaven she's at all worried about the 12 years she spent suffering, that she didn't understand what was going on? She didn't get to hear this Bible study. She's okay. There's a lot of stuff. Every human's going to go through things they don't understand, and that God isn't going to give you every answer you want while you're sitting here. Don't ask a pastor to be able to do that. Don't ask a parent to be able to do that. God may answer you some really deep questions that you've been asking, but he's going to say a lot of times, "Trust me." And I think sometimes we have unanswered questions because I think we think if we just got all our answers, we'd do great. And I think we're wrong. Every answer you get leads you to another question. You know, it's kind of like a lot of things, the if onlys. If only God does this, then I'd trust him and I would never doubt him again. Are you serious? Do you know how many people have done that 25 times? If only God would do this, then I would trust him. That's endless. It never stops. We think it would, but it wouldn't. So Jesus goes now to where the girl and the people there that are paid mourners, and we've talked about them before, I won't take time, they mock him and they ridicule him. That's sick. But he puts the mockers, the ridiculers out, and then raises the dead, you know, talikamuthi, rise. She's sleeping. She's not dead. Well, with Jesus, death is sleep. You know, you close your eyes here, and some people are going, yeah, I wish it worked less way. You close your eyes, you're asleep. Some of you have trouble falling asleep, but once you do fall asleep, the next thing you know, you're awake. It's that quick, right? With Jesus, death is sleep, and we will wake up in heaven. He puts the mockers out, and that encourages us to put the mockers out of your mind. You may have mockers around you who mock your faith. Putting them out doesn't mean open the door and say, oh, get out of here, necessarily in our situation. But there is a place where you don't hang out with mockery, where you can, but especially the mockery between your ears. Do you ever hear voices? I don't mean voices, but impressions about, yeah, I can't do that because God isn't with me like he's with that guy. I can't be that because I have this problem and weakness. I can't do that because I have doubts and fears, so it's probably not me. It's everybody else but me. It's everybody else but me. So I would say 90% of the people that I talked to over 50 years of talking to people about God, I would say 90% have said, I'm not like other people. Only 10% say, yeah, I'm just like everybody else. I'm similar. So where are all these everybody else? Because I only get 10%. Everybody says, I'm not like everybody else. I'm being honest with you. You might think I'm being cute, trying to be cute. I really hear that way, 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 way more than I hear, yeah, I am like other people. We're very similar. I have my own unique certain things, but we're all a lot alike. No, I don't hear that from people. I hear, I'm not like other people. So if that's what your mind says to you, I think you're pretty much being lied to. And the scripture doesn't say that, doesn't it? There's a 10%, 20% who are unique to everybody else, and they can't do it. It's not for them. It's whatever. Yes, there's a journey, but the first step is I am like other people. So Jesus raises her up. Verses 27 to 31. This is what we do. We work our way through the chapter, even on a Sunday morning. When Jesus departed from there, two blind men followed him, crying out, saying, Son of David, have mercy on us. And when he do you believe that I'm able to do this? They said to him, yes, Lord. But he touched their eyes, saying, according to your faith, let it be to you. And their eyes were opened, and Jesus sternly warned them, saying, see that no one knows it. But when they departed, they spread the news about him to all the country. These guys were physically blind, but they see really clearly. Son of David, have mercy on us. In those words, who is Jesus? He's the Son of David. He's the Messiah. Have mercy on us. His nature is merciful. And they also believe in his power and his mission because he came to open blind eyes, and that's what they asked him. And when he opened their eyes, they couldn't keep their mouths shut. Now, I don't know the answer to people say, well, if Jesus gave you an instruction, you should be able to do it, so they're disobedient, so that's a problem, or that it's just God showing us that the beautiful side of it. I'll let you figure it out because I haven't figured it out. For me, I just look at it and go, how about you and me? Is the problem more that we fear speaking and being ridiculed or looked down on? Or is the bigger problem we lack seeing clearly what Jesus has done for us? Would you consider this? That your fear of speaking freely about him doesn't just come. it may come for all of us, or many of us, that we just don't have as clear a picture of what our salvation really, 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 really means. I mean, you could fill out the questionnaire. Yes, I believe I was on my way to hell, a lake of fire without Jesus. God saved me on this date, such and such, or sometime in my journey. I don't know when exactly, but I know I'm saved, and I know I'm going to heaven. And you could fill it out all just right. Jesus delivered us from the power of darkness, and we were all on our way to the lake of fire. It doesn't matter if that doesn't play well in culture. It doesn't matter if people think I'm an idiot for saying such a thing. They said Jesus was an idiot, and on the cross he said, Father, forgive them. They have no clue what they're doing. I'm going to go with Jesus on this. I need help here. I'm just like everybody else. I know this. Some of us do understand it better than others. And sometimes when you fail and fall short, goodness, beating yourself up for, I couldn't believe I'm such a bad person or could do so bad. What about, that's really who I am without Jesus. That's who I am without Jesus. And it's only the mercy of God that I've learned a different way, and especially that he cleanses and forgives me of even that sin. What makes you not want to sin? The love of God draws you to him. There's a healthy fear of God. I just described it. But at the same time, to understand what would cause us to not be able to keep our mouths shut, and that we were truly spiritually blind and could not see, that we were truly sick and dying in a death that we want no one to face. This is the gospel. Jesus paid for your sin on the cross, and that suffering that he did in 6 hours is not 6 hours. It's an amazing beyond time sacrifice. He doesn't continue to suffer. That doctrine is not biblical. But he suffered it's beyond us. It's a beyond human understanding, and it should put us in awe of him. And it's not love of God. You can't emotionally do that, can you? You can't just suddenly, because your pastor said, you should be in awe of God right now. I trust the Lord that somebody here, when we teach the true gospel, not we're better or anything, but when we talk about the cross of Jesus, the sacrifice of Jesus, the blood of Jesus Christ, and the fact that for you to be saved meant he had to die for you, and you were on your way to the lake of fire, that somebody's going to have a light turn on. Not everybody. Somebody's going to have a light turn on. Somebody who's already a Christian is going to have a light turn on. Like, I finally understand is when you see your weakness honestly and you don't make excuses for who you are and for the internal things that are sinful, but you take them to the Lord and say, this is really who I am without you. This is who I am without you. And this will also help us not to look down on other people, because this is who I am without you, just like that guy is, she is, he is. We're all sick, and we're all healed by the blood of Jesus. So they couldn't keep their mouths shut. I wonder if we see clearly our salvation. Verses 32 through 34. And they went out and brought to him a man mute and demon-possessed, and when the demon was cast out, the mute spoke, and the multitude marveled, saying, it was never seen like this in Israel. But they didn't say it like that. And they said, it's never seen like this in Israel. That's probably how they said it. But the Pharisees said, oh, here we go. This is sick. He casts out demons by the ruler of demons. Wow. Of course, this is not a simple physical malady that came from. We know about a lady who swallowed a penny when she was young, a baby or something, and it lodged in the side or something. Not maybe it wasn't a penny. It was a penny. She was a child. Nobody knew she swallowed a penny, but it didn't go down. It was lodged in the side of her throat. It covered with, you know, the body covered it to protect. She went to where she couldn't speak, and they never could discover it with x-rays. It was before we had the MRIs and stuff. And then she's like 60 or something. She coughs it out. It finally breaks through, and she can talk. That isn't what this is. That was just to give you a mind break. This guy's deaf and he can't speak, and the source is demonic, and we'll do more on this later as the stories go. I'm not going to develop everything, but when the oppression of the demon's gone, the ability to hear and speak is restored. What a blessing. This is the sickest of all. They need a reason to not believe in Jesus, so they blame the miracle work the Holy Spirit's doing through him on the devil. That's extreme danger for damnation. And more of this on a future study, but why don't we see as many miracles today? You know what? If you could go around the world, you'd see many more miracles than you see in the Bible from Jesus alone. He said, greater works will you do than me because I go to the Father. And he would give those 12 and then those 11 plus the rest. And then they would travel around the world. And if you went around the world right now and itemized all the miracles, there are people getting raised from the dead. It's not often. I don't know how often it is. But there are places where things are happening. Things have happened with us. I've seen miraculous healings. If you added them all up, they'd be far more than everybody in these towns that Jesus went to. But it isn't like each one of us is going to do everything Jesus did in the way he did them. Jesus mostly here is giving testimony of the coming kingdom and his rule over all. He says, don't talk about my miracles right now to some of these guys, because he knew the sideshow would actually bring people only for miracles and not hear the word he spoke. I think that's part of it. I may not understand all of it, but he did say, let's wait. I'm trying to build a case here and a point here, and I'm going to reveal myself. He does true mission. His true mission is salvation. And it's rather clearly shown in the last verses we'll read, that where we end the chapter. Verse 35, then Jesus went about all the cities and villages, teaching in their synagogues, preaching the gospel of the kingdom, healing every sickness and every disease among the people. But when he saw the multitudes, he was moved with compassion for them, because they were weary and scattered like sheep having no shepherd. Then he said to his disciples, the harvest truly is plentiful, but the laborers are verse into its harvest. So this beautiful, beautiful picture that we see is he sees the multitudes. And some people, when they see a crowd of people, they see an opportunity for fame or an opportunity to make a buck. Jesus saw the multitude, and he saw their deep need. He could see each person in that crowd. He saw their need, and he had compassion. More than their physical needs, he saw, it says that they were weary. They were weary. You know, we jumped ahead to last week at the end about the true rest that's Jesus. We'll come back to that in another way later when we get there, but Jesus sees the weariness of life on earth for you and me. He sees life in a fallen world. You're in a fallen world that can make you weary. And we're fallen internally. We're fallen internally, which can make us really weary. Yeah. What happens to shepherdless sheep? They get lost. They get injured. They get sick. They get hungry. They get eaten by wolves or other wild animals. They need a shepherd. Sheep need to be led by God, by the good shepherd, as Jesus talked about himself. And that's given to us in John chapter 10. And in verse 11, he says, I am the good shepherd. The good shepherd gives his life for the sheep. A hireling is only there as long as it's safe for him. And when he gets in trouble, he's books. But the good shepherd stays and will do whatever it takes to guard the sheep. And he says the harvest is great. The harvest is great. Don't believe the enemy's lies, who says no one wants to know God. None of your friends want to know to God. None of your family wants to know God. Nobody wants to know, but some, we got saved. How come you got saved? Were you more pure than the people that you pray for? Were you a better person? So then we should look at it with God's eyes, shouldn't we? That, not listen to those voices. There's people that don't want it right now, but sometimes the very person, you know, if you've been around the church a while, and we know people in regions where guys walk into a church they've been going through for 20 years, and they meet another person that day, and they knew each other in high school, and they were both idiots. You got saved? Yeah. Well, and then they tell their stories, and like they were totally separate. Or one of them was a Christian, the other one wasn't, and they had no idea this person got saved. Happens all the time. It really does. Wouldn't you like to meet somebody here that you knew years ago, and you thought, well, they'll never get saved. I didn't know you were God. They'll never get saved. That's like, don't say that. Just choose not to say that. The good shepherd gives his life for the sheep, and the harvest is great. The harvest is still great today. The beautiful harvest. And the laborers are still few today. Is that true? I'm not here to pick on anybody. I don't think I'm like above anybody. I want to speak truthfully. It's still true. Laborers means labor. Get sweaty. You get dirty. You get tired. You get sore muscles. You went mountain biking. You went rock climbing. You worked in your garden. You had that other sport or activity or business, and you worked so hard to build it up. We're not afraid to get sweaty and tired and work hard and have achy muscles for so many things. People spend a fortune and a weekend to go to New York City and Boston. I'm not faulting it. I'm just expressing that people do things. Miss a day of work or come in at 2 in the morning or 4 in the morning and then go to work the next day because they wanted to go to a concert or a game. Well, I can't go to church. I can't serve in this way. I can't do that because I'm tired. And listen, this is not in conflict with resting in the Lord. I'm not asking you to sign up for everything at ACF. I'm making a point, and I'm not going to be shy to make the point, but I'm not asking you to do anything right here. I'm asking you to consider the focus of your life. And when you say, I can't, or it's hard, it's too hard, it's just too much commitment, it's too much energy to do a Bible study, to go to whatever it is, or outside doing something of being involved in a community group that reaches people and touches lives. Not just at church, just anything. What's wrong with being tired for something important? I can say this for two reasons. One, because it's true. So regardless of Rick Cohen, it's true. I can also say it because we don't squeeze people here. We don't. We don't squeeze you to be a part of something and do this and do that and rah, rah, sign up here. We just don't do that. But I'm not going to be shy. As I've watched for all the years of my life, the harvest has always been great, and the laborers have always been few. That's just the way it is. And so you just get to do with that whatever you do with it. But I want to also say, I thank God for the people that labor around me that give me courage and encouragement. There was a guy like this in Paul's life. In Colossians 4:12, we have a guy named Epaphras, and I don't think we have this on the screen. I'm pretty sure I added this later. Who is one of you, a bondservant of Christ? Yeah. always laboring fervently for you in prayer. Laboring in prayer. There's one thing you'll remember when you leave here. One is I'm a jerk. Number two, laboring in prayer. If prayer meeting isn't easy for me, I won't go. If praying isn't easy for me, I won't do it. I don't know who I'm beating up, but I'm not trying to beat you up. I just want us to really see there's labor in the kingdom, and it's good labor, and you labor at other things. It's just a matter of priorities. I think it's supposed to be a labor to pray, to draw you near to the person you're praying to, not to present lists to him. Even on Monday nights or Tuesday nights, we try to learn not to make it all about, each of us comes with our list that we want to say. And I know people, sick people, and that's just cashing out 20 different people's illnesses. Well, there is people praying for illnesses, and it's a reasonable thing to do, but there is way more to it. And sometimes you have to work through stuff with other people. People have been very patient with me. I want to say that I get way better treatment than I deserve from all of you, honestly. But you know what that does? That's why I'm bold right now, partly, because God has given me people that encourage me and tell me, don't be fearful, Rick, and just say it like it is. And they also show me the love of Christ, the way they operate with stronger. Do you want to be encouraged to be stronger? One way or another, get with people. Yes, it's hard. Sometimes it's painful. People get on bowling leagues and they have somebody they don't like on the league. They still bowl with them. I put it in perspective, man. So, the word laboring, fervent laboring, the word laboring, where Epaphras is laboring for you guys in prayer, is agonizomai. The word in that is agony, agonize. Contest, like in a gym. Fight, like in a battle. Contend in difficulty and danger with strenuous zeal. You know, what am I going to get out of this? Will I feel tingly if I pray by myself for a while and pray for people? Will I feel the Holy Spirit? If I go to a prayer meeting, will I feel the Holy Spirit? And will he touch and heal this thing that's hurting me? And everything's inward, and everything's about me. Welcome to a life of depression. But take heart, those of you who may be in the minority, maybe you're laboring in prayer. You're laboring and giving of time and energy and serving. Take heart. Take heart, number one, you will always be the minority. You just will. I mean, don't be discouraged by that, but just like, don't be looking that you have to have it get pumped up by other people all the time. There's some balance between these things. Hebrews 6:10 says, "For God is not unrighteous to forget your work and labor of love, which you have shown towards his name, and that you have ministered to the saints, and you do minister." There's one person who won't forget or won't say something stupid to you and discourage you. And where it really counts, none of us are ever going to outgive God. He gave us the only thing that cost him when he gave us Jesus. God gave you and I the only thing that cost him. If God gave you $1 million, how much would that cost him? Zero. He can create. You're going, well, why doesn't he? Why doesn't he give me that car? Why doesn't he give me that job? Why doesn't he give me that mate? Why doesn't he give me this, that, the other? Well, maybe he wants you to, maybe I don't know the answer to all those things. I just know what he really wants for you. There's no thing God could give you that is greater than what he has given you. And if you can't see that, it's because you can't see. And so then you ask God to open, if you're wise at that point, you ask God to open your eyes to see. And you keep asking. Because he'll do it. He'll open your eyes. But he's drawing you to him. He gave you the only thing that cost him when he gave you his son. And once again, we're going to celebrate and thank him, whose love knows no bounds. You know, the one who gave himself for us in communion. And it's going to be passed out to you. And as it's passed out to you in a minute, just hold on to the elements. The gluten-free is the crackers in the middle. Otherwise, you have a cup, double cup, with a cracker and with the juice. And I'm going to have Becky come up and grab a microphone and join me.